From The Spy Analyst, The Invisible War Fought with Stories, Not Soldiers. An important read, the kind you'll find yourself rereading, and then reading your own news feed differently for a long time afterward. Somewhere right now, in a language you don't speak, about a country you've never set foot in, someone is quietly deciding how millions of strangers will feel about people who have never done them a moment's harm. No vote was taken, no hearing was held, no one was asked. This is the story of how that decision actually gets made, carefully, patiently, by people who study a nation the way a locksmith studies a lock. And it's the story of why it could just as easily be made about the place you call home, or, as you're about to discover in the very last section, about you, personally, tonight, the next time you pick up your phone. Here's what you're about to walk through. Why a story is one of the most powerful weapons a state can wield. How a real internal problem becomes a global weapon in someone else's hands. 5 centuries of receipts proving this isn't theory. And, in the final stretch, a field checklist to help you spot it happening in real time, in your own feed, tonight. Read slowly, because by the end, you will not be able to unsee what's happening around you. Let's strip away every layer of academic language and get to the bone of it. A narrative is a story. That's it. That's the whole definition, at its purest form. But don't let the simplicity fool you, because this simple story is one of the most consequential tools any nation possesses. It is soft enough to slip past a border guard undetected and hard enough to outlast the government that launched it, the war it was built for, and the generation that first believed it. Every country on this earth is, at its core, telling a story. Every single one. A rising economic power tells a story about ambition and modernization. An ancient civilization tells a story about wisdom, continuity, and legitimacy earned across centuries. A young, diverse nation tells a story about reinvention and freedom. A resource-rich state tells a story about sovereignty and self-determination. A small nation surrounded by giants tells a story about resilience and neutrality. Every nation, in other words, is a storyteller whether it realizes it or not. And the ones that don't realize it are the ones most vulnerable to having their story written for them by someone else in a room they were never invited into. Here is the first truth that most people never stop to consider. In a narrative, the story matters. But the storyteller matters just as much, because the same fact, told by 2 different voices, lands completely differently on the world stage. Picture a courtroom for a second. 2 witnesses describe the exact same event. 1 stumbles, contradicts themselves, won't quite meet the jury's eyes. The other is composed, consistent, and calm under cross-examination. The underlying facts might be identical, and only 1 of those 2 people walks out of that room believed. Credibility isn't automatic. It's earned, built, and, crucially, communicated. So a narrative is never just a story. It is also the craft of telling that story, the art of making the world lean in, listen, and believe you. You can have the most truthful story in the world. But if you tell it clumsily, if you tell it without strategy, if you tell it without understanding your audience, the world will simply scroll past it, on its way to someone else's version of events. This is the uncomfortable truth intelligence professionals understand, and ordinary citizens rarely do. Truth alone does not win the room. Truth, delivered with skill, does. Now here's where it gets interesting. Imagine any nation stands on the world stage and declares, "I deserve to be recognized as a major global power." Fair enough. Ambition isn't a crime. Plenty of nations feel entitled to greater recognition, and many have legitimate grounds to claim it. But here's the catch that trips up even powerful states. Simply asserting greatness convinces no one. The real, much harder question is this: how do you make billions of strangers across the globe, people who owe you nothing, who will never meet you, who have their own countries and their own problems to worry about, genuinely believe that your claim to greater status is legitimate? This is where narrative building stops being a communications exercise and becomes something closer to psychological architecture. A nation cannot merely tell its story once and expect it to stick. It must construct it, carefully, deliberately, brick by brick over years, so that the story doesn't just reach the world's ears. It reaches the world's trust. It gets repeated by others, in their own words, unprompted. It becomes accepted as fact, even by skeptics who started out doubting it. And that transformation, from claim to accepted truth, depends entirely on how well the story is communicated, not merely on how true it is. This single insight is the hinge on which the entire concept of narrative warfare turns. Let that sink in before you move to the next section. Let's ground this abstract idea in something concrete, a value many nations claim as core to their identity: restraint, the refusal to use force even when force is available. It's a beautiful claim. It's also, on its own, meaningless. Because here's the rule that governs every credible narrative: claiming a value proves nothing. Demonstrating it consistently across time proves everything. So how does a nation actually prove that peace isn't just a slogan? The answer: through pattern, repeated, documented behavior across different eras, different leaders, and different circumstances that tells the same story again and again, independent of who happened to be in charge at the time. History actually hands us real, verifiable cases of this scattered across continents and centuries. In 1815, after the Napoleonic Wars finally burned themselves out, the Congress of Vienna formally recognized Switzerland's permanent armed neutrality. What's remarkable isn't the declaration. Declarations are cheap. What's remarkable is that for more than two centuries since, through two world wars fought on its literal doorstep, under governments of every political stripe, Switzerland has never once been dragged in as a combatant, not a slogan, a pattern tested by the two most violent events in modern history and unbroken by either. In 1948, Costa Rica did something almost no nation in history has done voluntarily. It abolished its own military, redirecting the budget into education and healthcare, and has never rebuilt one since, even as neighbors around it militarized and regional conflicts flared for decades. Post-1945, Japan wrote pacifism directly into its constitution, capping its armed forces as a self-defense force rather than a standing military. A structural, legal choice, not just a talking point, that has shaped its foreign policy identity for three generations and counting. In the 1990s, South Africa, transitioning out of apartheid, chose a Truth and Reconciliation Commission over mass retribution, a deliberate, documented decision by a new government to break a cycle of violence rather than continue it, at a moment when the entire world half expected the opposite. In the mid-20th century, Martin Luther King Jr. and the American Civil Rights Movement refined an entire doctrine of organized, disciplined, nonviolent resistance, tested under real, documented persecution, beatings, bombings, assassination. And the doctrine didn't stay contained to one movement or one country. It was studied and adapted on other continents entirely. By Poland's Solidarity Movement in the 1980s, by the Philippines' People Power Revolution in 1986, by Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution in 1989, by the Baltic states' Singing Revolution that same era. A method exported. Notice something remarkable here. These are different people, different country.